something more meaningful.
Now, you characterized American food as fun. Do you think, is that how you would describe, you know, our national cuisine? Do you feel we have a national cuisine?
Well, you know, people think a national cuisine has to be kind of like a national bird or a national flag. You know, there's one singular thing that stands for all Americans. And I don't think that national cuisines actually work that way, especially for a country as incredibly diverse and democratic and divided and regionalized and mass mediated as the United States. You know, we're the only country in the world where we have a professional eating circuit of people who compete to see who can eat the most. And so we've turned eating into a competitive sport. You know, so I think what Americans love everywhere you go is fast food. And frankly, I think fast food represents America all over the world. So when people in China go out for American food, they go to KFC or McDonald's. When people in Brazil want to try American food, they go to KFC or McDonald's or Burger King.
Now, when you go to Belize or when you travel elsewhere and they ask you, well, what do people eat in Indiana? Or what is Midwestern cuisine or food ways like? How do you describe the ways we eat in this region?
Well, I like to describe Thanksgiving and Christmas dinners because I think those are places where there's more of a sense of the past and continuity and family. And it represents another important side of American life besides the fast food and the nutritainment. And that's a kind of sense of rootedness and the incredible way that we're able to take different traditions from different parts of our family and bring them together and make them our own and to kind of enjoy that pleasure of a regular ritual that we perform every year. Sometimes, you know, with differences, sometimes we cook a goose in my house instead of a turkey, but the way the meal is put together and the way we eat together is very particular. And so we always try to invite people from other countries to come and share our Thanksgiving dinner because we want them to see what an American tradition looks like because many of them don't see it otherwise.
And what are their responses when you've invited them in the past?
A lot of the time they say they had no idea that Americans ate like that.
Really?
You know, what they had seen was pizza and fast food or hamburgers or spaghetti or something like that. They had no idea that we had these kind of family events where the cooking was fairly elaborate and important emotionally to people. I also like to take people to the county fair to see the judging of cakes and pies and preserves, as well as the judging of animals, because that's another side of American cooking and American food, which I think we forget too easily. But being able to bake a really good cake or pie from scratch has, for a long time, been a matter of great pride to American women in particular. And those traditions really still have a lot of emotional meaning for people. And it's not just old people like me. It's when I talk to students about meals that are significant to them, they always go to Thanksgiving, Christmas, Easter, Passover, to kind of family events, which you might only do two or three times a year, but they really stand out.
Sure. Now, given, you know, we've talked about festivals and festival foods, fast foods and whatnot, that makes me think of the health ramifications of the ways many Americans are choosing to eat today. Where do you think American foodways are headed, given, you know, looming diabetes, type 2 diabetes predictions, obesity predictions?
Well, you know, I was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes 2 weeks ago.
Oh, no.
So this is very personal for me right now. And I'm kind of in the midst of rethinking my diet, which I thought was pretty healthy to begin with. But I think there's really two different ways that Americans are responding. The first is what you might call the have your cake and eat it too technological way out. And that's that food technology is going to be providing us with more and more fake foods that look and taste like kind of like spaghetti or kind of like bread, but are actually made with fake starches that just go right through you. So that we'll be able to eat our sweets, we'll be able to eat our big carbohydrate-laden meals, but instead of being real mashed potatoes, they're going to be fake mashed potatoes. And I've tried some of these fake foods, and by and large, they're not very good fakes yet, and not really much of a substitute for something like noodles or bread. But, you know, if you talk to people who have a gluten-free diet, well, these days, you can get just about anything gluten-free. And for the people on a low-carb diet, you can get pasta that's low-carb. Which is pretty weird. But I think there's going to be more and more of that kind of looks and tastes like food, but is really not food. Guilt-free. So you get to have your cake, eat it, and not have the calories.
And not worry about it. Now,
I think the other response is people going to the farmer's market, growing their own food, and trying to eat a healthier diet, this combined with a more active lifestyle.
And I just learned here in Fort Wayne, they're hoping in the next year or two, they're going to put together a public market of many different ethnic groups bringing their traditional foods for sale at market, open air market. So I'm really excited to see when that launches, how Fort Wayneans are going to respond to that. I know I'm excited about it. Now, for listeners, can you share with them a little bit about the Anthropology and Food Studies program there at Indiana University Bloomington?
Yeah. We're in our fifth year now, and we're starting to see similar programs popping up like mushrooms at other universities and colleges around the country. We have an undergraduate minor, so students can minor in food studies, anthropology. So we're still kind of based in the anthropology department. We also have a PhD program for anthropology students. But we have faculty we work with in history, English, American studies, folklore, geography, biology, nutrition, and environmental policy. So it's very multidisciplinary. And in the next couple of years, we're planning to have a kind of standalone food studies center on campus and to work towards developing a two-year master's program in food studies for people who want to get a couple of years of training but who don't necessarily want to make the enormous commitment of a PhD program.
Sure. And just real briefly, can you provide listeners just a sampling of some of the projects that your students have taken on as part of this food studies program?
Yeah, one of our students is studying community gardeners in Denver, Colorado, and trying to figure out when people say that they get so much pleasure and enjoyment out of gardening, what they mean when they say pleasure and enjoyment, because we don't really know. People aren't very good at explaining that. We have a student who's working on the manufacture of plastic food in Japan and Korea, where it's a huge industry making this plastic food that goes and sits outside of restaurants. Let's see, we've got a student who's studying how radio programs like your own are getting across ideas about food through sound. So what's the connection between taste and sound? And what kinds of devices do people use on the radio to make people think about food? So you may end up being interviewed whether you sometime in the next few months.
Now, wouldn't that be interesting?
By one of our students.
Well, Rick, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today. I know I've learned a great deal, and I encourage listeners to check out the food studies program down there at IU Bloomington, and I wish you well with your health. I'm sure that's put an interesting spin on your personal and professional life. So the story will be continued, I'm sure.
Well, it's my pleasure talking to you. I really enjoyed it. And we welcome inquiries down here. We have a website that's connected to the Anthropology Department website. And we have links to all the other food studies programs in the U.S. We're trying to keep up.
Sure. All right. Well, we'll cut it off there, Rick. But Gosh, I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. I know it wasn't terribly convenient given the phone situation, but I really don't mind it at all.
Not at all.
I will definitely let you know. I don't know how soon they'll get to editing this, where this is in the lineup, but as soon as it is edited and on, now these are going to go on as podcast. At least that's what the project is as of now. So I'll let you know when it's edited and live, and I'll definitely get in touch with you about that. I do have an accompanying blog, so if you feel like chiming in and adding anything and letting your students know, I'm one of the many anthro bloggers out there. So it's slow but growing. So we do have a Facebook presence too for these cultural conversations, as I'm calling it. So I'll make sure I link you up to all of that.
Great.
So, well, take care of yourself, and I'll be in touch.
Let me ask you.
Sure.
We're running a Sawyer seminar this year, and we have some money to bring people from other Indiana campuses to Bloomington to talk to the seminar. Is that something you might be willing to do in the spring?
Yeah, if you link me more information about that, that'd definitely be. I love coming down to Bloomington, so yeah, absolutely. And connect with more anthros and others and students. That would be wonderful.
Okay.
So yeah.
Well, I will add you to our list.
Perfect.
And when we sit down, well, it'll be, I guess. Skype down.
Okay. Yeah.
In the next 2 weeks, we're supposed to, according to our budget, we've got six people visiting the seminar.